Among the beautiful, tranquil scenes Lancaster County is known for lurks a deep, dark secret, one Rosemarie knows all too well.
It's not me only. There's a lot of other children out there. There's a lot of other, you know, people out there, like men that go for that.
Rose remembers as early as age 3 being sold by her mother to have sex with men in exchange for money.
Why? Why me?
I will never get over the shock of a parent trafficking or a family member trafficking and exploiting their children. That will never go away.
Jen Sensenig, a busy mother herself, noticed what was happening in her community, a dirty secret even her husband couldn't believe.
I was skeptical at first that this was really happening in her own backyard.
And as a mom, when I started taking out of the equation that these are someone else's kids, these are our kids.
And so with the support of her family, the North Star Initiative began.
I think it's awesome that someone has seen this need, and she's so willing to go and love on these people, and it's not something that everybody has a heart for, and I think it's really awesome that God gave her that gift.
The mission? To restore lives and support women who are victims of human trafficking, like Rose.
God bless them for everything they've done for me, but I never really asked. They knew I was in need, and they offered.
This is the dream of what we have been doing.
North Star now has The Harbor. It's a place where women can escape from human trafficking and start a new life.
That one person has made this happen. She started it, she kept on going, and this building stands here ready for these women because of her.
It is a place for these women to come and belong and find family and community.
In a way, she taught me that one person can make a difference. That's why I'm speaking. I might be only me, but my voice is heard, and maybe I'll make a difference.
Rose is one of the women that we have had the privilege to serve. And I want to say that Rose has been one of the most powerful voices that I have ever heard as a trafficking survivor. And she shares her heart and her story over and over as a North Star advocate on behalf of other women who have also been trafficked. So we are lucky to have Rose with us this morning. And I'm going to ask her to come up and join me. All right, my friend, she has courage every single time we do this, because this just is never an easy time sharing her heart and her story. So thanks for being here, girl.
Thank you for having me.
We want just to ask you to share briefly your story. How did it come about that you were trafficked?
Well, it all starts with my mother. My mother, let's say, she wanted to have a child to sell. That's basically what it is. I'll be a little more blunt now that I don't see children around. She tried first, and she had a boy, and she gave him up for adoption. He's 2 years older than me, because in those days you could not make money off a boy as much as you could a girl. And so she got pregnant, had me, and started training very early in life, and she started, I don't remember exactly when, but I do remember when I was 3. She started selling me when I was 3. And it continued on 4, 5, 6, you know, until 9. But I'd say around 7, I started noticing that, because before that, I thought that was normal. I thought everybody did that. You know, I didn't know any different that there was such a thing as other kind of life. And then I started noticing that children are wearing uniform, going to school, this and that. And I'm like, wait a minute. They're not doing what I'm doing. So I started, you know, questioning, like, I want to go to school. That was my main thing. I wanted to go to school. So I kept asking, I want to go to school. When will I go to school? And she'd tell me, no, you have no reason to go to school. You have one purpose in life, and that's make money for me. And this is what you do, and I did it, and I did it well, until I was 7, 8, 9, I start getting beatings and punishments, because my customers were not happy with me anymore, because I had lost my innocence. I wasn't, you know, doing the pedophilia game that they want you to do. I was more about, let's get her done, business, you know. And so beatings were starting and things, you know, I started realizing that my life was not normal, that there's a whole nother world out there that's the normal. And 8 and a half, I said, I had enough, it's done. And so at 9, I ran away. I ran away and I was homeless for 5 years. And I did not do what, you know, what I was trained to do in those 5 years. I tried to not go into it. And I'm going to be honest, after 5 years of being homeless, 9, 10, 11, I went through a lot. We don't have all day, but I have a long story. Well, I decided that I didn't want to live anymore. Like, I'm tired of life. And I don't know how, but my solution was to go to the U.S. Embassy. And because I had seen my passport and I knew I was a U.S. citizen, I was born here.
And maybe explain at this at this point, Rose,
how I was born here.
Well, so. Where had your mom trafficked you?
Mom trafficked me in all major ports of the world. I have traveled extensively. I'd say maybe 65% at least of the world I have traveled. Because of my travels and living in these places, I've learned 7 languages. But we used, I mean, no offense to anybody, but most of my customers were Navy. So wherever the carriers or submarines went, she had a schedule, we'd follow them. We went to every port that carriers went to. And
this is how you ended up at the U.S. Embassy.
That's how, you know, by traveling, I see my passport here and there. And just one day I said, I'm done. And I passed by and I saw U.S. Embassy. I said, hey, give it a shot. And I went. And I'm like, this is me. This is my story. I had my name. I knew I was an American citizen. But I did not know how old I was. Birthdays were never celebrated or anything like that or paid attention to. I didn't know what my birthday was. I didn't know nothing like that. And so they did research, and they found out that all these years that I was homeless, my grandmother had been looking for me from the Philippines. I didn't even know I was really Filipina till then. And they're like, your grandma's looking for you. I'm like, okay. So they shipped me off from Italy. When I surrendered myself to the U.S. Embassy, this was in Genova, Italy. So they shipped me off to the Philippines, and here I am. My grandmother did not speak a lick of English. I didn't speak Tagalog at that time. And she was extremely like a hermit, like she didn't trust anybody. She was always inside. And I guess she had a bad experience trying to raise my mom, that she didn't trust anybody. So she would kept me locked up. And when she left, because she didn't trust me, because of her experience with my mom. My mom was always, you know. And so while I was being locked up, I had been alone all these years. I was going crazy, like, I can't do this. And so I waited for her to fall asleep, and I stole the key, and I took off. And here I am, homeless again, but in another country. I didn't speak the language. I didn't know nothing. I didn't know anybody. And I'm walking around like, well, you know what? You've survived so much more. You'll do this. It'll be no problem. So I'm walking along. But I really didn't want to do it because I was so tired already from, you know, the previous homeless experience that I really didn't want to do this all over again. You know, it was just tiring. I feel tired. And so I looked up because I had been avoiding anything related with prostitution before that in my 5 years. I knew what to do. I could make money real easy, but I didn't want to do it. You know, I was trying not to do it. So I looked up and I seen a sign that said wanted go-go dancer. I'm like, I can't do that. So I went in, they gave me a bikini to try, tried it on. I was hired right there and there. I was 15. That's a whole nother chapter, what I went through that. But while I was in that lifestyle, I learned a lot of things. I learned drugs, alcohol, things that, you know, as a kid, when I was in the business the first time, it was candy, you know, things like that. But I learned, I appreciated the money, and I got used to it, and I did it willingly this time. I guess I forgave myself by saying that that's the only thing I know how to do. And it's not, I'm not being forced into it. I got a choice this time. I'm doing it willingly. And I did, I decided I would go back into willingly into prostitution, and I did that for 12 years. I have two children that are product of prostitution. They don't know their dads. I don't know their dads. Their dads don't know that they have two beautiful, gorgeous girls that I have raised and sent to college and everything, paid for. I paid for it. And that's about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Rose is here with us and just doing a amazing, wonderful job raising her children. And
they're done being raised.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's on to grandkids. If you want to see her beautiful new grandbaby after church, come see her. But Rose, you know, as we listen to your story, you know, part of, you know, what we hear is that you had to rely upon what you knew to survive, what you had been raised in. And so as life continued on, getting re-trafficked and then prostitution without an education, what would have happened, do you believe, in your life if there had been an organization or a place like the Harbor, someplace that you could have gone and found the support you needed? How would that have helped you and maybe changed your story?
I would at least have some kind of education, at least a GED. It's very hard, even I'm 55 years old now. It's hard for me to get a job, a decent job with benefits, just because I don't have a GED. I bet anybody, I'm willing to bet this, and I usually win if I'm betting, but if I would take an IQ test with anybody, I would be up there. Just the fact alone that I taught myself how to read and write and to speak seven languages, I am up there in IQ, but I don't have that piece of paper. I tried. I tried, and actually I managed to pass four of them. I got stuck with English. Semicolon, commas, pronoun. It's sending me into a coma. I can't speak it, but it's got so many rules, and, you know, I just can't get over this. And I wish some companies would overlook that fact and hire you for the dedication, because I'm not... Mm-hmm. I guess I'm bragging, but if anybody's familiar with Kid Rock, it ain't bragging if you can back it up. I am one of the hardest workers you will ever find. Mm-hmm. I am one of the most dedicated employees. I will work my buns off. Not many of you would say this, but my perfect schedule at work would be 6-hour days, 12-hour days. Mm-hmm. The reason why, I have post-traumatic syndrome. I know what it's called now. I was diagnosed with it. If I'm really, really tired, when I go home, it helps me sleep without nightmares. So as an employer, you'd love to have someone like me that really wants to work, but then I have complaints too much overtime.
So with the post-traumatic, having counseling to come alongside you?
I have come to you many times that I request counseling. I've had and my requests are always specific. Mm-hmm. My first time I asked for counseling it kept bothering me, why me? It kept going in my mind, why me? It was more like faith. Like I kept saying, there is no God. If there is a God, he will not allow a child to go through what I went through. So I requested counseling. In this counseling, I learned that God gave human, which makes sense, free will. And that a human has a right, you know, not a right, but that's their free will makes them choose whether you're going to be good or you're going to be a pedophile. So you kind of learn and let go of your anger. Like I let go of my anger with God on that subject. And so I'm learning, I'm battling that, and I'm, you know, mm-hmm. We're talking, let's just say. Then I seek counseling for, what was it that I seek counseling for?
Well, you've sought it over the years.
Over the years,
I've
asked her for help and different, to give me some experts in my latest one. okay? This is really hard for me. I was approached by my daughter that my mother is dying. And in her deathbed, she would like my forgiveness. I had to battle with this, and I asked Jen to get me in touch with someone, to talk to someone about forgiving her, because to be honest with me, I don't know if I want to or can. So I went there, and I'm like, well, she's dying, and I just want you to forgive her after she's dead, really? I can't believe this. And I learned, you know, I wasn't even going to go to this counseling, but my son approached me about it, that, hey, grandma wants forgiveness, and, you know, I said, there's no children. I said, really? She wants forgiveness from me? She says, Mom, don't you think that even the worst person on earth deserves to die in peace? So I thought about it, and I'm like, well, I don't think she deserves to die. And so I was like, honey, I'm going to be honest with you. I've always been honest. I don't know if she deserves to die in peace in my eyes. In my eyes, I'd like to see her kind of tortured, you know? He's like, Mom. I said, okay, how about this? I'll give you a free vacation. We go back to the Philippines. Just give it a shot. Free vacation. So I was like, okay, I promise to go there. I promise to be open-minded. I don't know how I'm going to deal with it when I'm faced with her, if I can forgive her or not. But I will promise to try. Mm-hmm. It's very hard. I know it's very hard for me to say I'm going to forgive her after everything she did. Mm-hmm. I do understand she's dying, and my children want that. They want closure. But I have not decided on that yet. Mm-hmm.
Let's give Rose a hand for her courage this morning. Thank you for being here. We have had just the privilege of serving alongside beautiful, courageous women like Rose. And you can see the courage that it takes for these women to come to a place. You know, this is probably one of the hardest journeys I have ever watched someone walk, and the courage it takes to face their story and decide that they're not going to just survive what they came from, where they came from with trafficking, but that they are going to overcome and they're going to thrive. And that is the beauty of what we get to do with North Star. That is why we exist and started this whole thing. And so as we continue, I just want to share that this morning is a time of reflection, kind of a time of looking back and looking ahead this morning. I'm personally in a time of transition with the organization. In the beginning of the year here, the Lord really started to make it clear that I was transitioning out of being a staff member with the organization. And so during that time, the executive director, myself, and the board thought that a good transition and one of the best things we could do was to move me to an ambassador role where I would continue to speak and write for the organization. And so with that, just thinking about this morning, we wanted to share a little bit about my personal journey with North Star and look back. As we talked about that, Keith said to me over the weekend, he said, Jen, I think you need to share why. You know, share why you started North Star. And then he said, and I kind of was like, well, thanks a lot, hon. Thanks. He said, why you? Why you, a blue-collar suburbia mom of three kids with no degree on how to run a nonprofit or run a restoration home? And so his question took me right back to the early days of North Star. Back years ago when I was the stay-at-home wife and mom, caring for my family as my ministry, serving at the church youth and children program. You know, I loved serving in these capacities. It was great. But I remember back then of this wrestling, just this wrestling inside. And the wrestling was my coming to terms that God had this heart for the world. And God had this heart for justice and the justice issues like poverty, oppression, and abuse. And so, you know, I was content to keep going along. But I also knew that there were these other things stirring, and I didn't know what to do with them because they were part of my God's heart. And they were things that were starting to become a huge part of my own. And so I began to pray to him like crazy for clarity during that time. I told him in my prayer of surrender, Lord, I don't know what to do with this. I don't know what to do with this heart that I have for justice as a mom of three living here in Lancaster. But if there is something for me to do, if you have a place and something I am supposed to do, then show me. So it was more than a year later when I came across the massage spa on Route 30 near Target, and I met Katrina and the other women in that location that had been trafficked in from Asia for sex and exploitation in that spot. And so as that heart for justice and restoration for those who were being trafficked continued to grow, I sensed that we were being called to launch North Star and open this home for women. Again, it started the wrestling. And so I prayed again for clarity and surrender on my part. And so this time, God answered. And his answer to me again was Katrina and her story. I just remember that face. He would bring her face right to the forefront in my heart and my mind as I'd pray this. And what he would say to my heart was, Jen, as long as there is one in need of freedom and restoration, because I am always about going after the one. That's our God's heart. As long as there is one in need, North Star is my heart, and you walk in it. And so here we are, 7 years later. You're going to get to hear from Jerry in a couple minutes just about the progress, the new update on the harbor. But we are 7 years later on the verge of opening North Star and fulfilling our mission. And so with this, as I ponder this question, when I think back to why me, I remember all the Moses moments, all the times of coming to the Lord, and my days of questioning whether we were supposed to do this. Did he have the right girl? I related well, oh my goodness, with Moses' story in Exodus 4:10-13, when God was calling him to speak to Pharaoh and lead the Israelites out of slavery in Egypt. Man, I felt his anxiety when I heard his prayer to the Lord. Oh Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither in the past and not now, since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. Anybody relate to these conversations with God? And so God reminds him, who gave man his mouth? Who makes him deaf or mute? Who gives him sight or makes him blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, because I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. And so, you know what? Even after this reminder, this blatant reminder of God's faithfulness to him, Moses still had his doubts. And he dared to ask God, Lord, would you please send someone else? Please send someone else to do it. And so this was me. This was me with the insecurity and the doubt of who I was. Yes, God, I have the counseling degree, but I really need to go on for more schooling to be more qualified to do what you're asking me to do. Well, yeah, God, I have this mama's heart of justice for this issue, for trafficking. And I took every single training that I could to educate myself on trafficking and restoration. But I didn't have any business management to pull this off. Who did I think I was, believing that I was being called to start North Star? And who did he think he was? You know, honestly, I feel like that's the real question. Who did he think he was? And so I want to bring it down for some real truth this morning. Who did I think that God was through me? And so as I considered this question, this is where the surrender to start North Star came from. Because when that's the question, knowing that he could accomplish North Star and it wasn't about me at all, but about his heart of restoration and justice through me. So launching North Star became about this belief and this truth and this promise. And it says in Ephesians 3:20-21, now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we could ever ask or imagine, according to his power that's at work within us, to him be glory in the church and in Christ Jesus throughout all generations, forever and ever. Amen. And so when I am surrendered, believing that there isn't really anything of relevance in me to get this done except for him at work within me to accomplish his purposes and plans. You know, that's when things get really beautiful in our lives because it allows God to show up in all his power. And even better, he gets all of the glory for what unfolds. And so this understanding changed everything. It changed the question for beginning North Star from why me to why not me. And so North Star has been all about God's heart. It's all for his glory today. And I want you to ask yourself the same question here this morning. You know, it might not be trafficking or North Star that God's calling you to. It might be poverty. It might be the village in Guatemala that we got to celebrate about and hear about this morning. Maybe it's going to be another part of the world that God is calling your mission to. Maybe the mission you're being called to is to share with your coworkers, your peers at school, or your neighbors. But what I want to ask you is, what is it that's keeping you from stepping out today? What excuses, insecurities, or doubts are holding you back to step into what he has called you to? And so this morning, I want to ask every single one of us, I want us to ask the question and refocus our hearts and our minds on the truth of this promise. Because when it becomes about this, the question now is, what about you? So as we continue ahead, if God is calling you to become involved in North Star, maybe he is calling you to become more involved and more engaged with what we're doing. I want to ask Jerry to come up and share a little bit more about the harbor, about where we're headed and how you can become involved.
Well, it's great to be here with you guys again this morning. I think I was here about a year ago or so and had a chance to share with Jen and talk to you guys about the vision for North Star Initiative. But as I'm sitting here listening to Jen's story specifically, I'm thinking about here, you know, God moved in Jen's heart as an individual, but the role that the congregation of Timberline played in, it wasn't just Jen's story. There was a role this body played in helping this vision become a reality and walking alongside Keith and Jen. I just want to acknowledge that. I've known Keith and Jen a long time, but as I started getting more familiar with what God was doing in Jen's life through this story, the intercession team, the leadership that some of the church here provided to help this dream become a reality is significant. And so I think it's worth, I just wanted to be able to honor you guys as well as Jen and Keith for being faithful to what God had put on their hearts and to walk alongside of them and letting this vision go from a seed of a thought in Jen's heart to a reality today. So thank you for your faithfulness in that. I'm going to walk you through just very quickly some very practical updates about what is happening with the vision of getting the restoration home open. So we purchased this home about a year ago, and in the fall, we had hired an executive director full-time, and her first commandment to her was kind of like, hey, help us get everything done for this home so we can get closer to getting this open and it begins serving girls. And so we've had a lot of renovations have taken place, some minor kind of construction stuff, but a lot of painting and carpet and flooring and stuff like that. So here's some pictures of some of the finished stuff. We actually moved our office in to the building and have used a couple rooms there to move our office there and got new carpeting and some new bathroom vanities. And so the home is basically, from a construction standpoint, ready. We have a lot of furniture. We're going to have to furnish rooms and do a lot of decorating and that kind of stuff. But we're excited about that because that was the first step, is getting the physical home ready. And we've been grateful, like God just provided. You know, we're trying to raise money and stuff, but God just provided. So E.G. Stahlfuss donated a lot of time and energy to make this happen. So we had two painting companies donate all their labor. Grauers donated all the paint. A security company is going to be donating a lot of security stuff to set up some cameras so we can make sure everyone feels safe that's there. And it's just been cool to watch God provide over the last several months in this journey. So what do the next couple months hold? Well, I think by May 1st, we'll actually have a lady joining our team as a restoration director, which we're really excited about. She has some clinical background and brings some great spiritual maturity into that role. And so her responsibility will be to help put together the team that's really going to guide the restoration for the girls in the home. And so she'll be working to pull together the service providers that we'll need, you know, the healthcare providers that we'll need, the mentors and the volunteers that'll help make the educational piece happen, the life skills piece happen, and just kind of being able to walk alongside the girls. So that's kind of a lot of the work that's going to be done over the next several months. And our date to open, that we want to open up for girls, is October 1st. So we want to be available. So we're so excited that that vision is going to become a reality this year. And so it's been a fun journey, and it's been, we're excited. We got a phone, I want to end with a story. We got a phone call on Tuesday, the 4th of April, about 3 weeks ago, from a Pennsylvania State Trooper. They had been collaborating with the New Jersey State Police. There was a trafficking ring that was recruiting girls or coercing girls from Lancaster, New York County, and trafficking them in South Jersey. And so they actually they went in and they actually rescued a girl that morning in a hotel in South Jersey, and she was from Lancaster. She's from Gap. And so she was 19 years old. And somewhere between Christmas and the beginning of the new year, she had been lured into a situation where she ended up basically being abducted, raped, and tattooed as their property and then sold. So for about 2.5 months, she was being trafficked in South Jersey. So they rescued her, and they called us to say, is your home open yet? Do you have a place for her? And we didn't, of course. So we were able to make some other phone calls and get some services around her. She actually she ended up moving back, and I think she had some family in the Gap area yet, and so she moved back into some family, but she was very, of course, traumatized and trying to figure out what was going on and what life was meant right now. So anyway, that, for us, that we were like, you know, Lord, this is why God has put this in Jennifer's heart 7 years ago, because he saw girls like this young lady from Gap who were going to need restoration and care and love. And we're going to need the hope of the gospel brought into their life. And I don't know if this girl's a believer or not, but on her Facebook page for, you know, at Christmas time, she was sharing about John 3:16 and the love of God in her life. So I don't know her full story, but I do know that there is a journey of hope and restoration that God has in store for her. And so you can join me in praying for her. But that also brings the vision for this to real reality. And it really does reflect God's heart, that God put this in Jen's heart and allows this journey to happen so that he can care for people that need this kind of care. So, you know, we sang this morning about God's name being wonderful, and in our meditation we talked about the hope of the gospel. And so this can be, you know, we tell these stories, you listen to even to the courage of our story here this morning, and you can get discouraged in it. But I think God leaves us with a message of the hope, who says there's always the power of the gospel to transform a life and bring you to a place of hope. And even in the testimony you heard this morning, there is an immense amount of courage and hope and life that's present there. And God has restored a lot of things. So we're believing that for even this young lady that from Gap here, that we're aware of what's going on in life. We're believing for restoration and for healing in her life as well. So thank you for your part in laying a foundation for that for North Star and walk alongside of this and continuing to support us in that, specifically in prayer and some other areas as well. So thank you.
I'd like to just say a special thank you to Jerry and to Jen and Rose and Keith, and for the way you allowed God to move in your lives. And you know, I remember, Jen, when we started this journey, I remember you and Keith said, this is going to take a while. And you know, it's amazing that it's like almost there. And that what a wonderful thing. And I want to thank all of you that have contributed to this and prayed for this. I want to thank Bill and the guys who have really made it a priority to pray for North Star and initiative and for the work. It's a blessing to be part of something. Some of us more maybe removed than others, but to be a part of it. And I was thinking first service, you know, to think that North Star, that we were a part of that and part of the Garden of Hope, which was a dream that Dawn had many years ago, and transitional housing, and just the way God has used that here, and what a blessing. So Jerry and Jen and Rose, Keith, thank you so much. God bless you guys. In the next step, we're going to be hoping and praying and believing with you that October, that's going to become a reality. Anyway, thanks so much for partnering with us this morning. I'd like to invite you just to stand to your feet, if you would. And I'd like to invite the prayer team up. These folks will just be available to pray with you afterwards. And they'll be hanging out here a bit, so feel free to utilize that. I also wanted to make mention, I forgot first service, but Jen and Rose are going to be back in the cafe area. There's some material there, and get the chance maybe to get to know these folks. So let's bow our heads for the benediction. God of hearth and home, you yearn to gather your children. You open wide the door and ask all far and near to come in. Reach out to those whose senses are dulled by oppression. Revive their spirits that they can understand your love. While still on their way, may they see you waiting with open arms, now and forever. You are El Navajo, God, our home. Amen. God bless you. Have a wonderful weekend.